Support for Politics and Public Policy reporting on SDPB is made possible by SDN Communications, your business broadband provider. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Join SDPB for our Republican primary debate featuring the three candidates running for office of U.S. House of Representatives. And this June, voters will decide which candidate represents the Republican Party in the general election. Let SDPB help you become better informed. Watch tonight, 8 p.m. Central, 7 Mountain on SDPB TV. It's also streamed at sdpb.org. And we'll have the radio replay on Friday during In the Moment. Now, the winner of the Republican primary goes on to face Democrat Tim Bjorkman in the general election. And Tim Bjorkman joins us today at the University of Sioux Falls SDPB studio with an update on his campaign. Welcome back. Nice to see you again.
Hi, Lori. It's great to be with you.
A busy season for you in a different way than it is for the Republican candidates, because you're on the road, you're not preparing for a debate. You're on the road listening to voters. What sort of things are you hearing across South Dakota right now?
Yeah, well, we have been to something like 110 different communities across the state. And we're at the beginning of a six-day road trip out West River that will start tomorrow. And one of the things that's so rewarding is that people in the communities we go to so often say, we haven't seen a candidate for federal office in longer than we can remember. So thank you for coming. And we just go into their coffee shops and their restaurants and their bars sometimes and just listen. And then we answer their questions. And the overriding issue on people's minds that I talk to has to do with health care, affordable health care. And it's people on low incomes, but it's also a lot of small business owners. We go all up and down Main Street in every community we get to, and it's not uncommon to be pulled off to the side for 45 minutes or an hour with a small business owner, not even worrying about their employer's health care or their employee's health care, which is a challenge, but their own.
Their own. Now, as soon as you said the word health care, you know, I've got my own story. And I'm sure people are telling you these individual stories. Yeah. Mine is with the price. My daughter has asthma. She's on Flovent. I have paid $25 for this inhaler. I've paid $250 for the same inhaler, depending on, I don't know which way the wind blows. Now my insurance company tells me she can't have it at all. She has to get a different medicine, and it's going to be more expensive. So you hear all these individual complicated stories, and people are frustrated. Can it be fixed?
Yeah, well, I'm convinced it can be, or I wouldn't have left the bench.
Yeah.
To work without pay for a year and a half to do this. And I think it's the major issue to be addressed in Congress. And I think we need to have people there who are willing to work across the aisles, blow past the special interests like big pharma and big insurance, and try to come up with some common sense changes. And so part of the problem with it, I think it's been caught up in politics for way too long. It seems like there was a real effort for 7 years. We've heard from the party in majority currently that they were going to give us much better health care and cheaper. And all we've seen is, in the midst of this health care crisis, that the Congress and the administration has made it much worse instead of fulfilling that promise. And so we've got to address two of the biggest issues, I think. And one is big pharma. I was hopeful that the administration was going to come out with some really progressive programs that were going to allow Medicare, for example, to negotiate with Big Pharma, and that would allow us to import medications that are developed in this country back from Canada, Mexico, and Europe so that we can pay costs comparable to theirs instead of the 2 to 7 and 10 times what they pay today for them. That's outrageous. And I haven't talked to one South Dakotan who thinks it's just that we should pay multiples for medications, which in many cases are needed to keep our neighbors alive, than Europe pays for the same drug.
If we turn on the news right now, I don't have it on in front of me, but there's a pretty good chance that the national news is talking about Donald Trump's tweets or the Mueller investigation or North Korea right now. But when you go into a South Dakota coffee shop, you're going to hear about health care. What does that tell you? Is that something that you're watching in Washington, politics really distracting from some of those big issues that we should be solving? Or is it really, no, it's happening, it's not working, but the media is covering, you know, everything else? What is your sense?
Well, I hear some of each, but, you know, people, most people, no matter what party they belong to, just want government to work.
Right.
And they're very frustrated that when there are big issues that can't be solved individually and that government could help with, that we're not getting to the solutions there. So it's very frustrating for them. And we, even this year, with events of kind of undercutting some of the price supports and so on for the Affordable Care Act, and then rate hikes looming for next year, we saw our own health care costs, my wife Kay and I, go up by 42% as of July 1. And I almost hesitate to tell people that story, Lori, because they can top me so often. It's a sad reality.
Yeah,
it's been devastating for middle class families, and you know we pay on average $10,000 for every man, woman, and child for healthcare in America. That's double what the average of developed nations pay. So that for a family of four is like a surtax, if you will, just for healthcare of $20,000 for every family. And it doesn't end there. It's the economic tapeworm that cuts away at our competitiveness internationally, too, because our employers are dragging those high healthcare costs into the products they manufacture and then try to compete internationally with others for. So it's a massive problem at every level. And beyond that, Lori, our political leaders haven't seemed to connect between the lack of access to affordable health care and untreated mental illness, addiction, workforce shortages that our employers and entrepreneurs all across the state face because of people who are ill and addicted who aren't able to hold jobs, and then our prison numbers that have grown at 30 times the population rate over the last 40 years. These are all tied in together, Lori. And, you know, we just left meeting with Sheriff Milstead here at the Minnehaha County Sheriff's Office and had a tour of the jail and listened to their perspectives. And, you know, we've got to get a handle on untreated mental illness and addiction, because not to do so isn't humane, but it's also penny wise and pound foolish.
And you've seen that as a judge as well. You've got a little bit of personal experience and face-to-face with families.
Very much so as a judge, and then before that on the parole board. And it's one of the things that drove me into this race. You know, I've seen the comments of some of our Republican friends in this race who say, I just wish we could authorize the states to be experimental with health care. Well, that's what the Medicaid expansion laws were for. They allowed for waivers for all kinds of unique approaches to providing Medicaid, like charging modest premiums, having some deductibles, and then giving the beneficiary a savings account to use those deductibles as they saw fit, holding them accountable for unnecessary emergency room charges, and then bringing in hospitals and others to help make up the 10% gap that the state would have to pay when this federal government puts in 90% of it. We rejected all that. So states like North Dakota, for example, have gotten on the order of $1.25 billion more than we did in our state to treat our sick and our addicted. We're paying our federal tax dollars for that expansion. We're just not getting any benefit of it here. That's going to support North Dakota and Mitch McConnell's Kentucky and Mike Pence's Indiana, who expanded under his governorship with some creative waiver approaches. So we've rejected that idea. This calls for a national solution to make sure that all people have access to affordable health care, because and that everybody pays what they can. You know, we subsidize something like 75% of the American public on health care, and some of those are very high-income individuals, but we leave out middle-class people who don't qualify for the Affordable Care Act subsidies because their incomes are just a little too high. And they're paying atrocious amounts that we have to address. Some of them go without coverage altogether and just take their chances. And then we're also leaving out the impoverished who don't have minor children in the home because they're not covered by Medicaid today.
Do you have a sense of optimism that if the people of South Dakota decide to send you to Washington, that as you know, our lone voice in the House of Representatives, that you can do some of those things like reaching? How do you think that's even possible? Or is it, I mean, I know you wouldn't be running if you didn't think you could make headway in that. But you know, with a Republican administration and right now, Republican Congress. How do you make inroads?
Well, thankfully, there are voices of reason in Congress. And not only in Congress, but across America, there's been a change in attitude about the Affordable Care Act. It needs repairing. There's no doubt about it. And one of the things it hasn't done is an adequate job of controlling costs. And part of the problem is big pharma, big insurance, and some other big corporations involved in the delivery of our health care that keeps our costs higher than every other nation in the world. We've got to address that. And, you know, that's one of the key things that I have spoken out about since the day I entered, and that is we need to send members to Congress who are going to fight for us in South Dakota and not be pawns of the special interests like the big pharmas and the big insurance companies. And we see that not just on health care, Lori, but on every issue. And you know, you can't fight the special interests if you take their money. And I was just reading the other day, of 435 members of Congress, only six don't take the corporations and the special interests money that's funneled into political action committees called PACs. I want to be the seventh. I want to be the seventh member in Congress to do that. We have not taken a penny of PAC money in this campaign. We've pledged not to take any once I'm elected to go to service, so that in South Dakota, our citizens will know that their lone representative, whether they agree with my position on a particular issue or not, will know that it's not bought and paid for, that it's genuinely gotten to. And I think that's long overdue. So the first thing is we need to send people who aren't looking for a career there, because if you go for a career in Washington, you're going to take their PAC money that they wave at you from the moment you get there in orientation. They want to buy your loyalty and your vote. That's why on the net neutrality bill, there's reason for concern when Senator Thune voted against it after taking some, what was it, $900,000+ from internet service providers. That kind of money flowing in to our congressman is just very hard for us in South Dakota to get our arms around. But it's something that we have to send people of character and conviction to Washington to stand up against. If we don't do that, our budget deficit is going to continue to soar, Lori, and our children and grandchildren are going to know a very different America than the one we've known.
I want to dig a little deeper on this notion of sort of, going up against big pharma or you know, standing up to the big insurance companies. And what does that look like? What's the legislative solution to that? Is it a philosophy, or does it play out in tangible, we will do that, we need to do this?
Well, again, you see a big obstacle on all of these major issues in front of us, whether it's health care, it could be tax reform, where I believe that the wealthiest donors of the majority party were rewarded richly for their major donations to the party and those people in office. And so it starts that feathering the bed of our congressional members starts in this campaign stage. So the first question we should be asking our candidates are you accepting special interest money? Because if they're taking the money now, they're going to take it when they get to Washington. We know that. Every other candidate in this race has accepted, well, let me say Chantel and Dusty have accepted special interest PAC money. You can see it in their reports. Once they get to Congress, or once I get to Congress, that's when the money is going to really be waved in front of us. And each person will have to make a decision whether to accept it or not. And if you want a career there, they make it very clear to you that you accept that PAC money that they wave in front of you. And when you take it, you will owe them your loyalty and your vote over time. We know this. Donald Trump helped illuminate it from his own experience all through the 2016 election. But it's deeper than that. Congressional leaders have their members dialing for dollars as soon as they get there, and they charge them for their committee choice based on how lucrative that committee is for fundraising. They charge a fee or a due for service. I've spoken out against that here on your show before. And very offensively to me, Lori, it's added to by this. Today in Congress, both parties, when they're there in session from Tuesday to Thursday afternoon, they'll cast their votes at, say, 9 o'clock on two or three issues, and they'll each make a beeline to their respective Democratic and Republican national congressional headquarters, one on each side of the street, and they will start dialing for dollars. They become telemarketers all too often, and they will dial for dollars until their beeper sounds telling them the next vote is up in Congress, and they'll go back and cast their votes and turn around and do the same thing, going up and down their donor lists, inviting people to the next fundraiser. It's very offensive. So the first way you fight that is to support the STOP bill, which would bar our congressmen from doing fundraising during the time Congress is in session. That is the least we should expect of them. And the second is we should not support leaders for either party who are going to keep this offensive congressional dues system in place. They both need to end it at the same time. I've pledged not to support any party leader who will support that, what I think is a corrupt system. I've called on our Republican friends to do the same. They've been silent. But this issue is catching on a little bit. A Republican candidate in Idaho is running on this same issue. And so it's starting to get traction, and there are a lot of people in Congress who hate this, Lori, for good reason, because they don't want to be under this system where they're constantly raising money for the party.
I'm going to cut you off because we just have a couple minutes left, and you're welcome to come back anytime, of course. But step one in sort of, you know, tackling and standing up to Big Pharma is to stop taking the money and sort of reform some of that. What is the legislative solution to the cost of healthcare, though? Once you're freed from, can you in a couple of minutes just give us a teaser of what that looks like once you've gone through step one?
Let me give you three. One is we ought to be able to at least import drugs back in from Mexico, Canada, and Europe at costs that are comparable to what they pay in those places. That bill failed in the Senate. Ten Democrats sadly voted against it. All of them got big pharma money. So we need people who aren't going to take their money to vote in the people's interest. That's thing one. Thing two, price transparency. I mean, we ought to hold hospitals and other providers responsible to tell us what the price of the product is. None of us would go into a cafe and order even a hamburger without knowing how much it cost. Yet every day all across America, we have these transactions where neither the provider nor the receiver of the services in the medical field have any idea what it's costing, and statistics show that lowers the prices, just to know. Third, we need massive reformation of our administrative billing services. We have all these providers and all these insurance companies with different forms, and the providers all have their own computer systems. You know, we've seen uniformity all across other industries, and that would allow for a much more streamlined and cost-saving process in those regards. And four, we need to have a way for people who are otherwise foreclosed from affordable health care to buy it, to get into it, and to pay for it. And that's why I support a Medicare option, so that if you don't have access to other health care, you ought to be able to sign up and pay for Medicare. And if you need help, you ought to get some subsidies, just like the other 75% of Americans.
We'll leave it there. You can join SDPB tonight for the Republican primary debate featuring the three candidates running for office of U.S. House. That is at 8 p.m. Central, 7 Mountain. But this has been our conversation with Democrat Tim Bjorkman. Come back anytime. I'm sure we'll talk to you between now and the general election frequently. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me again, Lori.